The Senate will please come to order. The clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bates, Beyer, Beyer, Boquist, Burdick,
here.
Devlin, Devlin, Dingfelder, Dingfelder, Edwards, Edwards, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Haas, Haas, Johnson, Johnson, Cruz, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morse, Nelson, Olson, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Rosenbaum, Shields, Shields, Starr, Steiner Hayward, Telfer, Thompson, Berger, Witsit, Winters, President Courtney.
Quorum being present, we will post the colors. Leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance today will be Senator Chris Telfer. Our invocation today is from Senator Jackie Winters from Salem.
Let us pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for your love and understanding of our shortcomings. Make us strong to do your work, willing to heed and hear your will. Help us to write in our hearts these words. Use power to help people. Remind us that we are given power not to advance our own purposes, nor to make a great show, nor a name. There is but just one use of power, and that is to serve others. As we go about our tasks today and in the tomorrows, help us to remember this, Lord. Let us also remember in this, our Black History Month, and recognition of our women's suffrage, that we are all your children. Justice denied for one is justice denied for all. Whether red, yellow, black, brown, or white, we truly are precious in your sight. Amen.
Today we have a special performance organized by Senator Dianne Rosenbaum's office. The Oregon Women's History Consortium will perform a reenactment in commemoration of the centennial of women's suffrage in Oregon and the efforts of those who led the women's suffrage campaign of 1912. Eliza Candy Jones is performing as Mrs. F.J. Bailey, anti-suffragist, and Janice Dilg as performing as Sarah A. Evans, pro-suffragist.
Good morning, senators, staff members, and esteemed guests. I'm so pleased that you've invited us here to debate the important issue of women's suffrage this morning. As a member of the Oregon Equal Suffrage Association, I can assure you that Oregon women have done considerable work to make Oregon a safer and healthier community. But we need the vote to continue that work. We need the same power as men to make our cities, our towns, our entire state a better place.
Good morning. I am the proud president of the Oregon State Association opposed to the extension of suffrage to women. Ours is the greatest nation on earth, and women have had their part in this great achievement. But women's most important work is in the home, and not on the hustings. And her power for good is greater because she has been content to be a woman and use her sacred influence on men to achieve better things. She has not striven to be an imitation of men.
Oregon men are actually in danger of being called mossbacks, but I am convinced and confident that they will join us in our effort this November 5th to extend the right of self-expression to women, which is really all that Vote for Women means.
I don't think there is anyone who hasn't heard about the ballot measure with all the shouting you suffragists do. Haven't you already tried 5 times? Why, from what I know, many women simply do not want the vote.
Anyone who believes that knows very little about most women. Readers of the newspapers can see for themselves that where women have the right to vote, they use it in great numbers. Why, the men of Washington, California, and Idaho consider women equal partners. What's wrong with Oregon men?
There is nothing wrong with Oregon men. There are many here who understand what a travesty the women's vote would be, as I obviously do. It would surely taint a woman's morals, for one thing. Reverend C.T. Wilson, for example, is an anti-suffragist and a prohibitionist, and he believes suffrage will only strengthen the immoral element of society.
Does Mrs. Bailey really think it would pollute a woman more to drop a ballot into a box than to slave over a steaming tub washing her husband's dirty shirts? I am sure that it's time to stop thinking of this nonsense and deal with the real issues of woman suffrage.
I ask this woman, who advocates for woman suffrage, what precisely shall be done with the baby while its mother trots off to vote?
On that question, I assure you there is no problem. We will leave the baby exactly where we do when we go to the city and county treasurer's office to pay our taxes.
Let me point out that women's suffrage simply has not accomplished what its advocates claim for it, as evidenced by the laws and conditions in the current suffrage states. The main cry of the suffragists is that women need the ballot to better protect the wage-earning women and child. The wages of women simply have not been raised in the suffrage states, indeed, quite the contrary.
Equal suffragists do not claim that we will cure every evil overnight. Time will be required. But social and political conditions have been changing over the last decades, and women's suffrage will help advance that cause. Why, if a woman can be Queen of England, Austria, or Russia, why not President of the United States?
Oh, well, that is just absurd. I call this debate to an end.
Thank you.
On behalf of the Senate, we wish to thank Senator Rosenbaum and our performers Eliza Canty Jones and Janice Dilg. Also, thank you, Senator Winters, for your invocation, and Senator Telfer for leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Courtesies of the Senate. Recognize Senator Prozanski.
Thank you, Madam President. Seated with me today is Sawyer Corson. Sawyer is a mentoree of mine. I'm in the mentor program with his middle school, Spencer Butte in Eugene. Sawyer's trying to teach me better ways of how to communicate and participate in the process. He says if I do well, he'll come back on the 20th just to give me a refresher. Thank you.
Sawyer, welcome to the Senate. You picked a great mentor or mentee, as the case may be. Courtesies are extended to you. Recognize Senator Dingfelder.
Thank you, Madam President. And I would like to extend courtesies to my guest today, Kate Bearden. And she's a graduate from South Salem High School. She's a freshman at Oregon State University, majoring in English with minors in music and French. And she's played the flute for the past 10 years. She's planning on graduating 3 years and going to graduate school in Seattle or on the East Coast, and even considering law school. We'll put you in touch with some lawyers to, you may want to reconsider. She loves public speaking and meeting new people and is interested in a career in politics, so who knows, maybe Kate will be our first woman president. Welcome.
Welcome to the Senate, Kate, and courtesies are extended to you. Recognize Senator Hess.
Thank you, Madam President. Colleagues, please extend courtesies with me in welcoming members of the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association who are watching our floor session from the galleries this morning. This association is hosting Compost Day here at the Oregon Capitol. You're all invited to lunch, and you will be able to see how the lunch that you don't eat is turned into compost. This is a free, zero-waste, fully compostable lunch that will be served in the Galleria today between 11:30 and 1. Please take time to enjoy their indoor and outdoor exhibits.
Let's hear it.
I assure you this will not be a waste of your time.
Let's hear it for compost, and courtesies are extended to the representatives of the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. Recognize Senator Bates.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd ask you to extend courtesies to Hayden Perkins, who's here with us today. Hayden is actually a native of Baker City and is interning this week with Representative Smith. His mother works with Representative Smith in their private position in Baker City. He comes kind of in a circuitous way to us, though. He actually works in our offices as a billing clerk part-time while he's going to Southern Oregon University and getting a degree in political science. So he has sort of a cross-connection across the entire state of Oregon. And Hayden, we are glad to have you here today. I'm glad you have the intelligence to come and see how the big house works before you go back over to the house and see how they try to get it done over there. Okay? Thank you, Madam.
Hayden, courtesies of the Senate are extended to you. Further courtesies. Remonstrances. Recognize Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to extend congratulations to Senator, now Congresswoman Suzanne Bonamici, who was within the past hour sworn in as the latest member of Oregon's federal delegation.
Further remonstrances. Recognize Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam President. This is a rather unusual remonstrance, but I would like to extend appreciation to whomever it was that amplified these speakers. For someone that has a hearing impairment, the progress and the performance, Mr. President, of these speakers today are fantastic, and I very much appreciate that. So, Madam President, I just wanted to extend that to whoever it was that did this. It's a vast improvement. Thank you.
We will hunt down that information and make an appropriate announcement at some point. Further remonstrances. Messages from the Governor.
To the Honorable President of the Senate and 76th Legislative Assembly, this is to notify you that a request sent to you February 3rd, 2012 to reconsider the appointment of Marcy Wichman to the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee is hereby withdrawn. Sincerely, John A. Ketauber, MD, Governor. To the Honorable President of the Senate of the 76th Legislative Assembly, attached to the Governor's appointment to the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee, subject to the Senate confirmation in a manner provided by ORS 171562 and ORS 171565. This appointment is submitted for your consideration and will be effective upon Senate confirmation. Sincerely, John A. Ketauber, MD, Governor. Paul Goldberg to Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee.
The Governor's executive appointment is transmitted to the President's desk for referral. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I'm directed by the co-speakers to inform you the House has passed House Bill 4008, 4034, 4043, 4117, 4024, adopted House Joint Memorial 201 and 202.
Reports from committees. In accordance with SR 8.55 sub 1, committee report summaries number 2 and number 3 were distributed to members February 6th, and number 4 was distributed today. This information will be recorded in the journal and status report so ordered. Propositions and motions. Recognize Senator Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that final consideration of Senate Concurrent Resolution 204 be made a special order of business immediately.
Senator Rosenbaum has moved that final consideration of SCR 204 be made a special order of business immediately. Senator Rosenbaum, to your motion.
Thank you. Having waited 100 years for a day to commemorate women's suffrage, I would urge us to take it up without further ado.
If there is no objection, so ordered. Third reading of Senate measures. Clerk will read the resolution.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 204, commemorating centennial of women's suffrage in Oregon.
Recognize Senator Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam President. Colleagues, I bring you a story of passion, determination, advocacy, debate, occasional violence, repeated defeats, and final victory in the face of all odds. No, this is not the story of the Occupy movement. This is the story of women's suffrage in Oregon. And that is what is commemorated in Senate Concurrent Resolution 204. You will see laid out before you many of the milestones and landmarks of this 42-year campaign. But I would like to talk today just about a few of the very exciting and colorful things that happened during Oregon's history. As many of you know, November 5th, 1912 was a very important election. In the country, Woodrow Wilson was elected as president. Teddy Roosevelt, in the Progressive Party platform, had made women's suffrage a plank of the platform. And here in Oregon, after five previous votes, voters in Oregon voted to amend Article 11, Section 2 of our Oregon Constitution to say that women should have the right to vote. That passed with 61,265 aye votes and 57,104 no votes. So as you can see, it was a fairly close election. But it was definitely something that had been worked toward for many, many years. In fact, there had been 42 years of advocacy by people like Abigail Scott Duniway bringing this issue before this legislature. Here it was first discussed in 1872, and the first two votes that took place in Oregon were actually referrals from the Oregon legislature, the first in 1884 and the second in 1900, and those were both defeated. And meanwhile, the state of Idaho had passed women's suffrage in 1896, Washington in 1910, and California in 1912. Well, we were one of the first states, as you all know, to have the initiative process, and that was put to good use by men and women, by Republicans and Democrats, by people from many, many groups collecting signatures to put this in front of voters. So three more times, Oregon men, the only people who could vote at the time, were asked whether we should give the vote to the women of Oregon. That was defeated in 1906. 1908, and again in 1910. But it didn't end there, and in fact, there was activity going on, vigorous activity and debate, and I think you saw a wonderful reenactment of one of those debates just this morning, and I would commend the Oregon Women's Consortium who have been doing these reenactments around the state. If you get a chance to see the full version, I would urge you to do so. But some of the colorful chapters were Abigail Scott Duniway, who really is the best known women's suffrage advocate and whose brother was Harvey Scott, who was the editor of the Oregonian newspaper at the time. So the Oregonian repeatedly editorialized against giving women the right to vote for the reasons that you heard in the little reenactment and others. And you can imagine what that family dinner table was like at Thanksgiving, having such passion on both sides of those issues. But Abigail did not give up as she continued as a teacher and a leader and an advocate. But there were also countless other organizations and women who are less well known, and some of those are named in the resolution before you.
people like Hattie Redmond of the Colored Women's Equal Suffrage Association, people like Mrs. S.K. Chan of the Chinese American Equal Suffrage Society, people like William M. Pike Davis of the Men's Equal Suffrage Club of Multnomah County, and so many, many other people who believed in this, who believed that it was the right thing to do to bring justice and equality to the women of Oregon. So finally, in 1912, by that vote that I earlier described, women did receive the right to vote. And we put it to good use. As you can see, it was mentioned earlier today that Suzanne Bonamici, our former colleague, was sworn in as the only woman currently serving in the Oregon delegation in Congress. But back at that time, women immediately started to run for local office and state office. And two women in particular in 1915 became the two first women to serve in the Oregon legislature. And appropriately, they were a Democrat and a Republican, Marion Towne from Jackson County and Catherine Clark from Douglas County, one a Democrat and one a Republican, were the first women in the legislature. So I just would like to end by saying that I think the story that this chapter of Oregon history presents is so indicative of the Oregon spirit, the ability to continue to fight for something that is justice and equality, and not to be deterred even when it seems insurmountable. I think that's a lesson that is being carried on by young people today. And in closing, I'd just share with you a quote from Abigail Scott Duniway, who said, "The young women of today, free to study, to speak, to write, to choose their occupation, should remember that every inch of this freedom was bought for them at a great price. It is for them to show their gratitude by helping onward the reforms of their own times, by spreading the light of freedom and of truth still wider. The debt that each generation owes to the past, it must pay to the future." I think those are words to live by. Clearly, we have a proud tradition to celebrate today and much more work to carry that on in the future. Very pleased to be able to co-carry this today with Senator Ferry Oley, and I would urge your aye vote.
Discussion. Recognize Senator Atkinson.
Madam President, to the motion, on behalf of the Teddy Roosevelt Bull Moose Party, and as the two ladies who this morning called us all men Mossbacks, on behalf of all the Mossbacks, we would encourage an aye vote.
Recognize Senator Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Madam President. I've always been an advocate of women's issues, and 2 weeks ago I had the pleasure of having breakfast with a number of women from East Multnomah County and the League of Women Voters, and they had a tremendous presentation on women's suffrage and gaining the right to vote. And I would encourage all of you to attend as many of these events. It's really, you don't think about what those before us have actually endured and gone through to bring us to what we are today. And I thank Senator Ferrioli and Senator Rosenbaum for bringing this forward, and would also encourage an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? If not, Senator Ferrioli, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam President. First of all, I'd like to thank you, Madam President, and the Chair of Rules and the President for allowing me to be the thorn among the many roses this morning. But I would like to point out a couple of things. On the opening morning, we observed during our ceremonies here in the Senate that history is written by many small and ordinary actions of people who, while going about their daily lives, create a legacy that we later recognize as historic. Most notable of these efforts are by those who exhibit a determination and a dedication to high ideals, which are championed by those of unflagging personal courage and steadfast determination. And that truly is the story of women's suffrage in Oregon. You heard my good colleague talk about the 50-year struggle and the many referrals and the many referendums and the many votes that were taken. But to a certain extent, the history of women's suffrage in Oregon is the story about Abigail Jane Scott, later to be known as Abigail Scott Duniway, and a lifelong argument she'd had with her brother, Harvey Whitfield Scott. Both were destined to become giants in Oregon history. Both siblings were well-educated. Both were very opinionated and outspoken on the issues of the day, particularly upon the issue of women's suffrage. Abigail was committed to getting the vote for women, and Harvey, her brother, was just as committed to preventing what he considered to be a calamity. Both siblings were journalists, both were newspaper publishers, and both eventually owned all or part of their respective newspapers, the difference being that Harvey was the editor-in-chief of the Morning Oregonian, while Abigail was the publisher of two small circulation independent newspapers dedicated to the cause of women's rights. The campaign began in the 1880s, and there were six vigorously fought campaigns in Oregon. Finally, these bills, these initiatives, these referendums were put before Oregon's exclusively male voting population in the years 1884, 1900, 1906, 1908, and then finally in 1912. The 1906 campaign was extremely interesting because it was the first time that mass communications and the principles of modern communications were used in a political election, in grassroots organizing. So that sort of became our first entry into grassroots organizing and political campaigning in the state of Oregon. Across the state, suffragettes regrouped for the campaign of 1912 and really hit the streets after this campaign had been successful in both Washington and Idaho. So the suffragettes were able to appeal to Oregon's local pride, because after all the neighboring states had passed women's suffrage. So in 1912, the voters approved women's suffrage by 52%. On the other side of this issue, Harvey Whitefield Scott, the editor of the Morning Oregonian, writing for the conservative bastion that the Oregonian newspaper was at the time, opposed such issues as free high schools, opposed state-supported schools of higher education, opposed prohibition, bitterly opposed women's suffrage, bitterly opposed organized labor, and opposed Oregon's system of direct primary, initiative referendum, and recall. So, you know, as a conservative, he certainly can be viewed by folks as having a rather mixed record, and I'll leave it to the listener to decide what of those issues he was actually correct on. But Scott was such a contributor to Oregon life and such a giant in our history, eventually, in recognition of that, Mount Scott was named for Harvey Whitfield Scott. At the end of this 50-year argument between brother and sister, involving a few other folks in the state of Oregon, we come today to recognize the 100-year contribution that the argument made by celebrating suffrage. But I will remind all who hear me in this room that it had to be men who voted to extend the vote to women, as they were the only ones that had the vote. So please join me in commemorating this milestone in Oregon history, this fabulous argument of public policy between brother and sister that ultimately involved all of the citizens in Oregon. Please join me in a unanimous vote for the passage of SCR 204. Thank you, Madam President.
The question now arises upon the third reading and final passage of SCR 204. Those who are of the opinion the resolution should be adopted will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Boquist? Boquist? Burdick? Devlin? Dingfelder? Edwards? Ferrioli? George? Girard? Hass? Johnson? Cruz? Montes Anderson? Monroe? Morse? Nelson? Olson? Prozanski? Rosenbaum? Shields? Starr? Steiner Hayward? Telfer? Thompson? Verger? Whitsitt? Winters? Atkinson? Bates? Beyer? President Courtney? 30 aye votes.
SCR 204, having received a constitutional majority, is declared adopted. Recognize Senator Rosenbaum.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that consideration of SCR 202 be taken from its place on today's calendar and be placed on the Tuesday, February 14th calendar.
Senator Diane Rosenbaum has moved that the consideration of SCR 202 be taken from its place on today's calendar and be placed in the Tuesday's February 14th calendar. To your motion, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. This resolution is honoring Mark Hatfield, and it seems highly appropriate, and we've had a request to take it up on Statehood Day, so I would urge that we do so.
If there is no further discussion, Senator Rosenbaum, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. President.
The question is on taking SCR 202 from today's calendar and placing it on the Tuesday, February 14th calendar. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. This motion has carried. Recognize Senator Diane Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that consideration of SCR 205 be taken from its place on today's calendar and be placed on the Thursday, February 16th calendar.
Senator Diane Rosenbaum has moved that the consideration of SCR 205 be taken from its place on today's calendar and placed on the Thursday, February 16th calendar. To your motion, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, this resolution honors Justice Betty Roberts, and the date, February 16th, will allow the family and many other friends to be here and coordinate with a commemoration at the Supreme Court. So I urge that we take it up at that time.
If there is no further discussion, Senator Rosenbaum, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Question is on taking SCR 205 from today's calendar and placing it on Thursday, February 16th calendar. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no. This motion has carried. Action on executive appointments requiring Senate confirmation. Introduction in the first reading of Senate measures. Second reading of Senate measures.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 203, commemorating Jubilee Year Sisters of St. Mary of Oregon and their 125 years of dedicated ministry and service. Senate Bill 1524, relating to private security professionals, declaring emergency. Senate Bill 1529, relating to property taxation, prescribing effective date.
These are passed to the calendar. Third reading of Senate measures. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 1510, relating to ocean resources and declaring emergency.
Recognize Senator Betsy Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I rise today to ask for your support for Senate Bill 1510, a bill supported by and sponsored by the Coastal Caucus. We are the eight legislators, Republican and Democrat, House and Senate, that have the privilege of representing communities along the Oregon coast. Colleagues, this has been a difficult bill for me personally. When the bill was in committee and I testified with my Republican and House colleagues in support of the bill, a number of my constituents were in the hearing room. They don't like this legislation. And I submit to you that Senate Bill 1510 is not a perfect piece of legislation. Some environmental and ocean advocates will say it's too little. Some fishermen and some related businesses will say it's too much. Perhaps, though, in our business, this bill represents the exact compromise that the Tillamook County Commission asked for in their February 1st, 2012 letter that was distributed to some of you. Senate Bill 1510 is the culmination of nearly a decade-long public planning process at the Ocean Policy Advisory Committee and began again in earnest in 2008 with an executive order from Governor Kulongowski. In 2009, this body passed House Bill 3013 that was sponsored by the Coastal Caucus, designated pilot sites, requested further evaluation with community teams, asked ODF&W to consult with OPAC, and asked ODF&W to report back to the legislature. Senate Bill 1510 is a minimalist bill. It calls on ODF&W to develop a work plan and rules in the spring and summer of 2012. It asks to start with research work with previously appropriated money. It asks that the work begin on the south coast and move north. It asks the agency to adopt rules to establish, study, monitor, and enforce marine reserves and marine protected areas. The definitions in the bill of marine reserves and marine protected areas are described by OPAC, are the work of community teams, and a lengthy public process. the physical designations affirmed by OPAC are expressed in the bill. Finally, the bill expresses a preference for the use of local vessels and captains in the pursuit of baseline data. And lastly, colleagues, it requires a neutral academic scientific evaluation and a report back to the legislature. Finally, the agency is on record as committing to work with the feds and research towards providing additional fishing opportunities, stock assessments, methods to reduce bycatch, and discard mortality as a further indication of their willingness to work with fishing communities. Finally, coming back to the disappointing philosophical difference that I have with some of my constituents, I absolutely believe that this bill is an inoculation against a ballot measure, a well-funded, East Coast-drafted ballot measure that has the very real potential to tie up the whole Oregon coast. I have seen the maps with as many as 32 marine reserves and marine protected areas designated. Senate Bill 1510 calls for marine reserves and marine protected areas on only 5 sites, 5% of the territorial sea, negotiated down from an original estimate of nearly 50% of the territorial sea and 20 sites. While some coastal residents object now, this bill protects the coast from economic Armageddon that would result from a ballot measure that imposes marine reserves on Oregon versus a demonstrated Oregon public process that keeps this exercise to limited, generally agreed upon physical sites with appropriate sideboards to protect coastal economies. I urge your support of Senate Bill 1510. Thank you.
We're now in a discussion. Recognize Senator Jackie Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill. Colleagues, as Oregonians, we care deeply for the place where we live. And Senate Bill 1510 is a great illustration of what we do best, since it reflects a bipartisan compromise that helps ensure the health of our coastal waters now and in years to come. As many of you remember, we passed legislation in 2009 that established 2 pilot marine reserves, as you've heard, one at Otter Rock, south of Depot Bay, and one at Redfish Rocks, just south of Port Orford. And because a system of marine reserves is vital to sustaining the health of our ocean, that legislation also laid out the process for us to develop a network of additional marine reserves off Oregon's coast. Senate Bill 1510 is a result of this work as it designates the marine reserve sites at 3 more locations, Cape Falcon, Cascade Head, and Cape Perpetua. This was no easy task. The 3 marine reserve designations represents over a year's worth of work by community teams, including over 25,000 volunteer hours spent evaluating the ecological, social, and economic uses of these areas. These 3 new sites, along with the marine reserve sites at Otter Rock and Redfish Rocks, will create Oregon's first system of marine reserves. This is the next step in preserving our ocean resources as envisioned by the previous legislation. With Senate Bill 1510, Oregon can join Washington and California, which already have marine reserves up and running, and it will create places specifically designated for increasing fish populations, protecting critical marine habitat, and boosting ocean research. Colleagues, Oregon's territorial sea is a public resource that we all treasure, and we all share responsibility for managing it wisely. This bill calls for a short and long-term plan for effectively managing marine protected areas and reserves by considering the needs of the local community and the whole state. The ocean users, the business and organizations that depend on a healthy ocean, and the plants and animals that live in and around our waters. I also want to point out that the new reserves will take up less than 10% of Oregon's territorial sea, yet they will meet minimum scientific requirements for size and cover key marine habitats. As one participant in the Marine Reserve community team said, these were really hard conversations. But in the end, the community teams made these 3 Marine Reserve recommendations which are now contained in Senate Bill 1510. We heard some amazingly heartfelt testimony in the committee. Again, I want to commend the bipartisan work of the Coastal Caucus. and also remind us that the ocean belongs to all of us and that we all benefit from productive, healthy, and sustainable coastal waters. For all these reasons, I urge your aye vote.
Recognize Senator Fred Girard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to commend the Coastal Caucus for their work. I think they've done a wonderful job on this. However, having said that, I'm going to be a no vote because to me this is a gun to the head piece of legislation. As most of you know, I look out for the sports fishing industry. For you that don't know, the Oregon boundary goes out 3 miles. Most of it is small sports fishing boats that go out of there and do the bulk of the fishing. There has been no documented endangered species within that 3 miles that I am aware of. This is simply a way of tying up the sea much the same way that we did the forest. This is a foot in the door policy, and I only see bad things coming down the road. So I will be a token no vote.
Senator Jeff Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I want to thank my co-carrier, Senator Johnson. We worked incredibly hard along with Senator Verger and our colleagues in the House on this issue for several years. I'm going to slightly disagree with the chair of the committee. Part of the reason we're doing this is not because marine reserves are good. I think the jury's still out on that. The reason for doing this is to determine whether marine reserves are good and appropriate on the Oregon coast. We have been dancing this dance, like I said, for several years now, and it was our decision as a Coastal Caucus that it was time to quit dancing and get down to science. And that is indeed what this bill allows to happen. It puts the 5 marine reserves in place, clearly defined, and everybody knows what they are, and lets ODF&W get busy on establishing baseline data for these marine reserves and then doing the research that will indicate to us over time whether there's value in these set-asides. It's an open question at this point. But we're taking a slightly different approach on natural resources with this approach. What we're attempting to do here is not do natural resource policy based on politics. Rather, we're attempting to do natural resource policy based on sound science and scientific principles. If indeed, after 10 years, it proves that these set-asides are valuable, the Legislative Assembly will have an opportunity to have a discussion on what the next step will be. If indeed after 10 years, what we find is that they really haven't given us any value, we can abandon it. That is the way this was set up, and it was set up appropriately. I would also point out that as a Coastal Caucus, there are bigger issues that need to be dealt with. The C4 plan, the C4 mapping, disaster preparedness, I mean, the list is relatively long. We can also throw in wave energy and a few other issues that we need to be able to get our hands around. But this was part of the baseline and part of, this was one of the pieces that we need to put in place. So when we look at all the activities relative, not just to the ocean, but the coastal communities in Oregon, what the federal government is doing, what the West Coast states are doing, and what we, our own agencies are doing, what the impact is going to be on our coastal communities. These are vital communities, vitally important to the state. It is our intention to make sure that the economic vitality of our communities will stay intact. And I believe there is nothing in this legislation that long-term or even short-term jeopardizes that. Some would say that 10 years is an incredibly long time for a pilot project. I would suggest that when dealing with the ocean, it is an incredibly short period of time. How many ocean cycles do we go through in 10 years? We don't know, because the cycles aren't regular like clockwork. So colleagues, we have been struggling with this issue for a long time. I think what we have come to is a very good consensus position. Oh, I shouldn't say consensus, because there's those who oppose it, but the majority of folks understand what we're attempting to do and believe that this is the reasonable approach to do it. I would also suggest to those who would have liked additional pieces in this legislation, the Oregon Legislative Assembly meets annually now, so there'll be more opportunities to have discussions. I urge an aye vote on the bill.
Question now arises upon a third reading and the final passage of Senate Bill 1510. Those who are the opinion of the bill shall pass, say answer. Aye as the names are called. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Burdick? Aye. Devlin? Aye. Dingfelder? Aye. Edwards? Aye. Ferrioli? No. George? No. Girard? No. Haas? Aye. Johnson? Aye. Cruz? Montes Anderson? Monroe? Aye. Morse? Aye. Nelson? Olson, aye. Prezansky, aye. Rosenbaum, aye. Shields, aye. Starr, aye. Steiner Hayward, aye. Telfer, no. Thompson, aye. Berger, aye. Whitsitt, aye. Winters, aye. Atkinson, yes. Bates, aye. Beyer, aye. Boquist, no. President Courtney,
yes.
Voting no, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Telfer, 25 aye votes.
Senate Bill 1510, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. First reading of House measures. Recognize Senator Brian Boquist, please. What purpose do you rise?
Vote explanation, Mr. President.
Please file your vote explanation.
I would concur with the other no votes that this is probably a good bill and a good course of action. As the carrier pointed out, unfortunately, how we got here is not exactly a good process. Thank you.
Thank you. Under the first reading of House measures.
House Journal Memorial 201, urging Congress to pass Chiropractic Care Available to All Veterans Act. House Journal Memorial 202, urging President and Congress to support full funding for United States Coast Guard operational readiness and recapitalization requirements. House Bill 4008, relating to medical imaging and declaring emergency. House Bill 4024, relating to central background registry. House Bill 4034, relating to prompt progress payments on public improvement contracts and declaring emergency. House Bill 4043, relating to documents issued by Department of Transportation, declaring emergency. House Bill 4117, relating to funeral products and declaring emergency.
Transmitted to the President's desk for a referral. Second reading of House measures. Third reading of House measures. Other business of the Senate, in accordance with SR 8.403, committee referral list number 3, was distributed to members on February 6th. The referrals will be recorded in the Journal and the Status Report, and it is so ordered. We're now under announcements. Recognize Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Democrats will caucus promptly at noon. Please get your lunch and be on time. Thank you.
Recognize Senator Ted Ferrioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Republicans will caucus at noon, so please get your lunch and proceed to caucus immediately. Thank you.
Are there other announcements? If there are no further announcements, and without objection, this Senate is adjourned until 11 a.m. tomorrow, Wednesday, February 8th. The Senate is now adjourned.